Hello, I'm Caroline and welcome to this podcast. If you want to learn more about how you can make a real difference in the world, then you're in the right place. Keep listening. I work as a communications officer for the University of Oxford and I've made it my personal mission to spread the word about local groups of people who've had a good idea and are making it happen together. We live in a world with some very big problems, but when communities take a stand, we can start to see a difference right away. Whether this is tackling climate change, making more space for nature, reducing waste, or combating air pollution. Even better, when we do this together, we can simultaneously tackle social isolation and loneliness and help people to have purpose-filled, meaningful lives. And because I believe that you can make a difference as well, I started this podcast to tell you all about what these people are doing and hopefully inspire more of you around the world to get together and make a difference. This episode is all about how important our surrounding environments are, both for our individual well-being and for bringing communities together. Let's start by imagining two scenes. The first is one of dereliction, a row of abandoned garages with rubble and pollution scattered around, a place that feels unsafe and uninviting. The second is a garden, an oasis filled with colourful sprays of flowers, bursting vegetable patches, and every shade of green imaginable. It's a place that encourages you to linger. You can hear children playing and friends chatting. I think we'd all agree which scene we'd rather have on our doorstep. The COVID-19 pandemic, with its lockdowns and working from home restrictions, has really thrown into focus just how much our well-being depends on our surrounding environment. But often this feels like something that isn't in our power to change. If we live surrounded by derelict garages, what can we really do about it? But as this episode shows, sometimes we do have the power to change this. In this podcast episode, I'm going to explore the story of Barracks Lane Community Garden, which is located on the outskirts of Oxford City in the Cowley District. Let's start with what exactly is a community garden. It's not a wild, natural environment, because it is managed and looked after. But it isn't like a park either, run by an official body you don't really know. Instead, Barracks Lane describes itself as a flexible green space available to anyone in the local community to use and one that can readily adapt itself to local needs. The garden is tended by a team of volunteers who are overseen by the garden's coordinator, currently Hannah Jones. She talked with me about how the project works.
Garden's for anyone, so we're open every Sunday, so every other Sunday that's via a garden guardian who is there set up with our outdoor kitchen offering tea, cakes, coffee, newspapers, and people can come enjoy being in the garden. Or we have a little work list if people want to help and volunteer by doing something to contribute towards the garden. And then the Sundays in between we have our community engagement gardeners there, so they are there to work in the garden as our gardeners, but also to help members of the public and our local community if they want to come and be part of the process of helping us keep the garden looking so wonderful.
Besides offering a green space, the Gardens Committee is also dedicated to offering meaningful employment opportunities, so the community engagement gardeners are paid for their time working for the garden thanks to a grant from the National Lottery. The garden has also been working with local charity Aspire to offer work experience placements for young people. But besides being open regularly on Sundays, the garden can also be booked by any member of the public to use, for instance, for a family gathering or a communal meal or a christening party. I asked Hannah what sort of people come to the garden. So what sort of people come to the garden then? Do you get all sorts?
Oh, everybody. We've got some really loyal friends of the garden, but we also have loads of different people come to the garden. I think particularly more last year when we were able to run our first event as we came out of lockdown. The majority of people that came to the garden were people that we hadn't met before, and I think they were just really looking for a nice, beautiful, sort of safe green space to come and be in. So yeah, loads of different people come to the garden.
We'll hear more about how the garden has responded to the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic later. But first, Hannah tells me how, besides providing services for the people, the garden also cares for the environment.
We've got a green roof on the outdoor kitchen. We've got rainwater harvesting on every single structure in the shed, on the edge of the outdoor kitchen, on the cabin. We've got rainwater harvesting, which we use. We have a compost toilet, so we collect our human waste and use that on the garden. We've always reused everything in the garden, but we've actually got a really efficient system going. And with our planting as well, it's always sort of like local regional varieties that are right for the area and that are good as pollinators and they're beneficial to sort of our wildlife.
I think I've used your composting loo myself, and I think the most bizarre thing is that, of course, you don't flush. You
just grab sprinkle some sawdust over the top, yeah.
But for quite a few minutes when I came out, I think I've forgotten to do something. So here we have a garden providing many different things for many different people, from employment opportunities to refuges for wildlife and an open space for the community to gather. But not so long ago, the site was derelict, a mess of abandoned garages, rubble, and industrial waste. Because the land was unsuitable for developing into housing, local residents were inspired to take ownership of it themselves as a community resource. John Green, one of the garden's trustees, who was involved right from the beginning, met me at the garden to tell me about how the idea came about way back in 2002. The first stage was finding out what the community actually wanted by conducting surveys asking how they would use the land if they had the choice.
By far the most overwhelming thing that people agreed on is they'd like to see it retained as a community space, a meeting place, somewhere where the community could gather. So the whole concept of a community garden was the direction we decided to go into. And we estimate around 70% of people supported the concept of a community garden without having any real in detailed idea what that would mean, mm-hmm. but the basic concept. And then we worked with the council to try and make that happen.
But why do you feel that there was this overwhelming need for a community space?
Well, we have two reasons really. One is that we're quite lucky in Oxford. We do have quite a lot of active community centres. But at this particular end of Cowley Road, people have to walk quite some distance to get to it. And possibly, you know, some of the people we've been talking to, some of the elders, people with less mobility, maybe with kids and things like that, it wasn't necessarily a suitable environment for them to go to. And also people wanted to be able to walk to it and for it to be on the doorstep, if you like. And also we felt that there was a desperate need just to have something that was different to a park, because the park has a degree of formality. And so you can't change what goes on in a park. You can use it and have a picnic, you can do those sort of things, you can play games or whatever, but you generally don't have any choice in the direction that or the facilities that would be provided.
So you wanted to have a more flexible space that could respond to what people needed, even if this might change throughout the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
At first, the group encountered a lot of resistance from the council and had to attend dozens of planning meetings and get to grips with all sorts of regulations. It took 4 years until they were finally handed over the keys to the site. But then they faced another hurdle. The group had to raise £70,000 to make the area suitable for gardening, including removing the concrete and polluted materials, replacing the topsoil, and creating pathways and flowerbeds. I asked John how on earth a small group managed to raise such a large sum. So John, how did you raise such a large sum of money with just the small group of you?
We were very lucky. We found two funders that both used landfill tax money to regenerate local neighbourhoods or regenerate bits of land that had previously fallen into some sort of disuse, to bring a green space back into that space where there's either pollution or buildings, but it was no longer in a suitable state. And we identified two funders, the Waste Resource Environmental Network, WREN, and the Trust for Oxfordshire Environment, who liked what we were trying to achieve and recognised the importance of getting rid of the asbestos and everything else and the efforts we were going to go to try and re-establish this as to what it was previous to the garages being built. Because previous to the garages being built, it was an unofficial allotment site and orchard that was used freely by local people. So the garages were then imposed in the 50s or 60s.
Now the garages are no more and the garden is an established part of the local community. Indeed, it's now the host for events throughout the year that bring together both local residents and others living further afield across the city, typically around 150 people each time, Hannah tells me. Naturally, these events have a strong seasonal element, from seed and plant swaps in June to summer evenings spent cooking on the fire pit and Christmas reef workshops at Christmas time. Perhaps my favourite time of year is autumn and harvest time, when orchards and gardens are overflowing with produce and the trees put on their fiery displays of colour. It's also when Barracks Lane hosts its annual autumn festival, which I went along to in September. So today it's the 19th of September and I've come down to the Gardens Harvest Festival. There are stalls everywhere and I can see a produce table where people are swapping seeds and plants and produce, which all looks home or allotment grown. We have a craft stall where children are making some wonderful things out of yarn. My nose naturally led me over to a delicious smelling corner where children and adults alike were rolling out circles of dough and embellishing them with olives, fresh herbs, cheese, wonderfully coloured vegetables. This was the pizza making stand which Kirsten, aka the pizza midwife, was looking after. So Kirsten, I hear you're the pizza midwife,
yeah.
And this is a proper pizza oven. How hot is it in there?
It usually cooks at about 350 degrees, so it's pretty quick and often burnt.
So we're talking minutes?
Oh yes, definitely, yeah.
Well, it smells amazing. Besides celebration, the Gardens events and activities have a strong focus on empowerment and bringing people together to share and to learn. Whilst at the Harvest Festival, I took part in a fermentation workshop, something I've been interested in for a long time but never had the confidence to try myself. I spent a very happy afternoon not just learning about the basic science of fermenting, but also tasting a wide variety of different pickles, including things I didn't even realise you could ferment before. Now we're trying some of the fermentation products which have been made earlier. So, Sarah, how does it taste to you?
It's delicious. I particularly like the kimchi, which is made with cabbage and I think some spring onions. And there's this lovely chili sauce that I've never had a fermented chili sauce before. It's really fresh.
No, and it's such a shame that you can't see, but the colours are amazing. It's like a little rainbow on your plate. After all the tasting, it was time to have a go ourselves. It didn't matter that I hadn't known my fellow workshop attendees an hour ago. There was plenty of laughter, and it felt like we were old friends already. There's a lot of chopping and prepping going on around me. I've got some really wonderful looking cucumbers, yellow ones, green wrinkly ones. Hannah, what have you got there?
I have yellow and green beans, which I'm cutting the ends off. And then I will try to ferment them in this big 1 liter jar with some exciting other spices, which I don't know yet what it is, but I will find out.
There is a table full of spices, which we're all looking forward to getting into once we've got these vegetables made. We all went home with at least one colourful jar packed full of veg and spices, and 2 weeks later I had the immense satisfaction of sampling my first homegrown, or rather home-fermented, product. Food is set to be an even bigger focus of the future plans for the garden, as Hannah explains.
We're hoping to move with our food production, so next year we're really looking forward to growing things. We've got a little polytunnel that we've now got in the garden, so we're looking forward to concentrating on growing things organically in the garden and then celebrate at the end of next summer with a big community cook-off. So we'll invite the local community to come to the garden to eat what's been grown in the garden, so that's really exciting.
Another focus for the future will be tackling loneliness and social isolation, an issue made unbearably worse for many during the COVID-19 pandemic. The garden was recently awarded a community grant from the National Lottery to host an 8-week singing project called Sing and Share. The aim was to encourage people affected by loneliness and isolation during the pandemic to come to a safe place and enjoy the well-known benefits of singing, being outdoors, and gathering together. During the COP26 Climate Summit, the group took part in a mass community singing project where groups across the country recorded themselves singing Enough is Enough. The song was written by Karine Polwart to draw attention to the urgency of the climate discussions. The words, the tree and the bird and the fish and the bell, are all found on Glasgow's crest and are used as the underlying theme of the song.
The tree and the bird and the fish and the bell.
To me, it's a beautiful illustration of how the garden is not just responding to local needs, but also the global challenge we all face in restoring our world. And that starts with allowing nature to thrive again amongst our communities. You can learn more about Barracks Lane Community Garden on their website, barrackslanegarden.org.uk. The music for this podcast was written by German composer D. Jan Key and used here under the Creative Commons license from freemusicarchive.org.